south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. A lot of people have been wondering what happened to me during the last two shows, since they were repeats. Well, I've been out on the high seas, South America way, so I just wasn't able to put together any shows. So, all in all, since I've been on PRN Radio for almost 4 years now, I guess missing three shows in all that time isn't so bad. Anyway, right now I'm broadcasting from guess where? Venezuela, one of my favorite countries to diss. And I know in past shows I mentioned I'd never go back again since I was shot at the last time I was down here. You might remember that story when I got the tires shot out of my rental car and a few bullets whizzed by my head. And I can tell you, when they buzz by really close to your ear like that, it's an experience you don't want to have. So why am I down here now? Well, amongst other things, I can tell you it's because of that dollar situation that I've spoken about on past shows. You know, I mentioned that if you have dollars and you're in Venezuela, there's such a huge difference between the black market rate on the dollar, if you change it to bolivars, versus the dollar when you change it at the official rate in the bank, that anyone who's got dollars down here is king of the mountain. And I mean just a small amount of dollars too. Because, for example, right now, if I walk into any one of the Venezuelan banks, I can get between 11 and 30 bolivars to the dollar. However, as soon as I walk across the street or down to the next store in the mall, I can get from 60 to 70 bolivars to the dollar. At minimum, twice the rate. However, that's never done right up front in plain view. Because it is plastered all over the place that taking dollars is illegal, which makes them all the more desirable, and everyone, I mean everyone, would love to have them. So as long as no one in uniform or from the government is looking, everyone will take them. And it's been working for me like this. I go into a Venezuelan store of some kind, and let's say I want to buy a shirt, which is priced at 300 bolivars. Well, after I try it on and take it to the counter, and I shrug and say, I'm sorry, I have no bolivars, I only have dollars. They say, oh, well, I'm sorry, we can't accept dollars. It's illegal to accept dollars here. Now, note that they're obliged to say that. Then it seems you'll always notice that the clerks in the stores look around to see if there's anybody official outside or in the hallway or near the door, anyone in some kind of uniform, that is, because there are so many cops and military types walking around in Venezuela, you wouldn't believe it, even in the malls. Anyway, soon enough, and it almost never fails, that someone in the store will wave you over and do the deal with you in dollars, at usually 60 to 70 bolivars on the dollar, the black market or the street rate. Now, a shirt that costs 300 bolivars is the equivalent of about 25 U.S. dollars at the official exchange rate. And that's for the average Venezuelan who could only change his bolivars to dollars at the rate of about 10 to 30 bolivars in the bank, like I said, the official rate. But of course, Venezuelans do not have dollars. They're paid in bolivars. And if they do happen to get their hands on dollars, they'll never go to the bank with it. They'll walk outside on the street and get someone to change it for 60 or 70 on the dollar. Anyway, in the store, at the official rate, that shirt would cost them anywhere from 12 to 30 bucks. And me, a gringo, or anyone with dollars, buys that shirt for around 4 bucks. Oh, and by the way, I'm in Caracas right now, the capital of Venezuela, which has about 4 million people, and looks basically like a big slum, all except that is for government and military buildings. In fact, anything that's official or national has a nice bright sheen to it and spotlights on it all night, and generally a sharp military guard marching around it. Pathetic, actually, but with socialism, that's what you get. And, you know, it's an awful lot like a huge version of Cuba with more money. Because, you know, they do have unlimited amounts of oil, which Cuba doesn't. But even so, with all that petrol wealth, there's so much corruption up at the top that everything non-governmental is in dingy, grimy disrepair. Remember, we're talking about Chavez socialism here. And believe me, every chance I get, I ask the people I meet what's really happening in Venezuela, because I saw Oliver Stone's South of the Border documentary, too, where he interviews Chavez personally and actually is kind of friendly with him. And in that documentary, Chavez and Oliver Stone alluded to the fact that U.S. and U.S. imperialism were at fault for most of Venezuela's internal disturbances and social problems. You know the drill. U.S. alphabet agencies in the country clandestinely fomenting riots and strikes and sit-ins and social unrest, etc. Well, I'll tell you, sitting here right now and knowing how to speak Spanish to these people, I can tell you that if those alphabet agencies are here, and I think they are too, they might as well go home. There's plenty of homegrown social unrest to go around. They sure don't need any clandestine help from U.S. organizations, that's for sure. And you know, I get the occasional email from people and people sending me links to certain articles and YouTube stuff saying the same thing, that the U.S. is fomenting street demonstrations amongst radicals and stuff, which is another reason why I'm here in Caracas, to see if that's bullshit or not. And you know, Venezuelans of all stripes are not afraid to talk to a gringo about it either. They're not like the Cubans when you make a visit to their country. They're afraid to talk about their government. They'd just rather avoid the subject altogether. But you see, down here in Venezuela, the socialism experiment has only been going on for 10 or 20 years. Not at all like Cuba, who've been under that system for generations, 50 or so years. And they went through a bloody revolution to prove it. Venezuela never had that. And you know what? Everyone I talk to, from taxi drivers to shoeshine boys to tour operators, even businessmen who've got the money to live decently, say it's been a complete disaster. The socialism experiment is just crumbling. And there's stark evidence of it everywhere. Oh, and by the way, the Venezuelan government owns all property, so you can't really own your own house or business or lot. If, for example, the Venezuelan government or some corrupt official feels they have a better use for your land or your house or your property, they can just take it. But I digress as usual. Now, first of all, you gotta know, this is way off the gringo tourist trail. In fact, every time I'd go into a restaurant or a lunch counter, someone, usually a worker, would point to me and say, "You're a gringo, aren't you?" Not in a bad or accusing way at all, but in a happy, friendly, excited way. They just never saw one before. So, with all Chavez's anti-gringo blatherings over the last 20 years, he still couldn't manage to kill the gringo advantage here. It's stronger here than I ever thought it would be. Just judge by what happens when you hold dollars here. It's like this. Venezuelans really dislike and distrust the U.S. government, but who doesn't? Though, like most Latins, individually, they love us gringos. So, like I said, right now, I'm in Caracas, a place where 999 out of 1,000 gringos fear to tread. And believe me, I don't recommend it, and you'll see why. But if you know your Spanish enough, like I do, you are such a rare commodity that your gringo advantage is intense. Now, with Caracas, I'm talking about a huge city of 4 million people. In fact, the entire time I've been here, I haven't seen a single gringo either. But you know, I was warned more than once as soon as I got off the boat, never to pull out U.S. dollars in public. They say it's a sure way to get tagged and mugged later on because someone will spot you out and then tell his friends. You see, what this broken economic system down here has done to the people, because they have to survive, it's kind of turned them all into sort of petty crooks. I mean, they have to eat too, right? For example, I was talking to a young lady tour guide who told me that the monthly minimum wage in Venezuela is 3,500 bolivars a month. If you convert that to dollars on the black market, you know, divide it by about 70, that works out to about 50 U.S. dollars a month. And believe it or not, about 90% of the Venezuelan population makes minimum wage. Think about that, 50 bucks a month. And since an apartment with working utilities, one that would be slightly lower middle class up in the States, but totally middle class or upper middle class to Venezuelanos, something like that for a family runs about 15,000 bolivars a month. Yes, I said 15,000. About 4 times the monthly minimum wage. That means not only everyone in the family, let's say there's a family of 4, has to go out and work and make minimum wage. Thus, 4 people in the family working would just about cover rent on a decent apartment. They also have to then somehow scrape up extra money for food, utilities, and day-to-day living expenses. All except for gas. Because remember, in Venezuela, they have the lowest gas prices on earth. In fact, I took a private bus tour through parts of the city where normal people fear to tread, a place where gringos never go, I assure you that. Now, this was a nice, relatively new Hyundai 25-passenger bus, air-conditioned and all that. And the bus driver told me he leaves it running all day. He never turns the engine off. Even though on his route, it sits for up to 6 hours a day in parking lots. Still, he leaves it running, just so he's got the air conditioning all day, because Caracas is pretty damn hot. In fact, today, as I do this show, it's about 88 degrees and very humid. So, how can bus drivers, taxis, and everyone down here, in fact, afford to keep their cars, buses, and trucks running, even when they're sitting in parking lots for hours and hours, just to get the advantage of the air conditioning? Well, that's because, as the bus driver admitted to me, no matter what kind of vehicle you have, they'll fill your tank for around 5 bolivars. That's no matter how big a tank you have. In fact, he said, because the government owns all the gas stations, no one really cares to monitor how much gas gets pumped. They just pump it and charge you 5 bolivars, which even at the cheapest U.S. dollar bank rate, the crummiest rate you can get, that's only 50 cents. And if you're lucky enough to have a dollar or two to convert at the black market rates on the streets, that means a whole tank of gas, no matter how big your vehicle is, will only set you back around 5 cents U.S. That's 5 cents. And that's why this bus driver told me so many people who live near the frontiers, that's the borders of Colombia, have had double and triple-sized tanks welded underneath their cars and trucks so they can drive across the Colombian border and make a killing at world prices on the extra gas they're carrying. So then you might ask, what about that 90% of Venezuelans who make minimum wage, 3,500 bolivars a month, when rents are like 15,000, especially in the big city? Well, they have to make extra money somehow, and I've found out there are hundreds of ways they do it. And it usually involves some kind of petty swindle. For example, one of the very coolest things you could do when you're in Caracas is to take this gigantic chairlift up the side of a mountain. It's actually an enclosed tram that holds 6 people at a time. And the ride is so long and spectacular that you might call it one of the wonders of the world. Again, one of the wonders gringos never get to see. It truly is both scary and spectacular. Now, you also might ask, why would I take such a scary trip like that when nothing really works in Venezuela? When I say that in the rest of Latin America, maintenance is a word not in the dictionary. Well, when in Venezuela, you can second that emotion. I'm not saying things don't work at all. New things work, of course, but after they get a year or so old, they have to be pasted back together with chicken wire and duct tape. I mean, after all, I talked to a guy who had a light new Ford Explorer that was broken down, and he said he was still waiting 6 months to get parts. Even though, get this, Ford has 3 manufacturing plants in Venezuela. As it turns out, the Ford manufacturing plants cannot get parts to fix the machines that make the parts at their manufacturing plants. You got that? The machines that make the parts need parts that they can't get. Sounds a bit like a Monty Python sketch, doesn't it? Oh, and speaking of cars and parts, I walked into Caracas's biggest Toyota dealership, walked into the showroom where there should have been like 20 cars on display, and there were, get this, 0 cars in the showroom, completely empty. Though all those little sales cubicles you'll see in any dealership were filled with guys in their white shirts and ties ready to take orders. Only they had no cars to sell. Even though, again, note this, Toyota has a manufacturing plant in Venezuela. So then I walked into Caracas's biggest Jeep dealership. Again, not a single Jeep in the showroom. Completely empty, though all the workers were there. You know, these new car showrooms are as big as basketball courts. They're the same as they are up in the States, based on the same model. In fact, if the signs weren't all in Spanish, you'd think you were at a Jeep dealer in Cleveland. A Jeep dealer in Cleveland in the Twilight Zone, that is. Though, come to think of it, maybe it is. Anyway, then after walking down the same avenue for a couple of blocks, I ran into a gigantic Kia and Nissan dealership. Again, not a single car in the showroom. So at that point, I had to ask one of the salesmen in there what the hell was going on. And you know, it's not like they were mum about it or trying to keep secrets. I was the gringo, the first gringo they'd ever seen, in fact. And believe me, all of them wanted to talk to me. Which goes to show, even in the epicenter of economic and social disasters, you've got that gringo advantage going for you. However, do remember, almost no one in Venezuela speaks English. So, if you don't know a spattering of Spanish, the locals are still going to want to talk to you and meet you, but you won't get too much of a meaningful conversation going, that's for sure. And another thing, I met a lot of Venezuelans and none of them have any relatives up in the States. And man, is that a refreshing change. Because you see, for Venezuelans who are in South America, there's no way to get up to Central America and slip through Mexico. There's like a 200-mile swamp called Darien south of Panama that no one can cross. Or swim. Too many crocodiles. Called crocodillos down here. And don't think some haven't tried. Anyway, talking to the car dealer who was just sitting around reading the paper and occasionally glancing up at the soccer game on TV. And shouting with the rest of his dealer buddies, "Gol!" like an idiot every time a score was made. Well, he told me that over the last year, all the big car manufacturers have taken a huge hit, starting with 2 bolivar devaluations in the last year, along with 40 to 50% inflation per year, which is the highest in all of Latin America. In fact, the highest inflation rate in the world if you don't count a couple of countries in Africa. He said, because of that, as soon as they get a shipment of cars in, they're all sold before they even get a chance to put them in the showroom. Because, you see, every day they sit in the showroom, they get more expensive, since they can't be bought in dollars, only in bolivars. And when you're looking at 4 or 5% inflation per month, not year, if a new car sits in the showroom for a month, they have to increase the price every month by 4 or 5% just to keep up with inflation. And as a consequence, there just is no such thing as bank financing because no bank can finance during 40 and 50% inflation. And because of those horrific currency uncertainties, there's no such thing as dealer financing either, meaning only people with cash can buy a new car, which is why almost all new cars go to crooked politicians. That's what the salesman told me anyway. Surprise, surprise, huh? Now, note that everyone I spoke to in Caracas agrees that all politicians are crooks. Except it seems they're always holding back about saying bad things about Chavez, who's been dead for a couple of years now, but it doesn't seem that way because you see his face and his statues and his paintings and his TV show and his coloring books everywhere. And this'll blow your mind. Every single large shopping mall I stopped into, there was a sort of an Army-Navy store that was basically a Hugo Chavez store, where you could buy pictures and mugs and statues and puzzles and uniforms and even coloring books and crayons for those tiny socialist kiddies, of course, along with toy jeeps and tanks and buses with Chavez waving out of the window. Not to mention Chavez dolls with heads that bob that you can put in your car. How cool. Almost bought one of those myself, but they wouldn't take dollars. Now, remember, down here, it's all based on the so-called Chavez mythology. Here in Venezuela, it's an awful lot like how Cuba mythologizes Che. You know, Che Guevara. If you've ever been to Cuba, I've been a couple times, you see his statues and pictures and paintings and puzzles everywhere, too. And you know, Che was scruffy and ugly looking, a revolutionary guerrilla type. And that's his image, you know? But Chavez, now, there's a guy whose monkey-ass mug will never be ready for prime time. Then again, neither will mine. I've got what you might call a face just made for radio. But, you know, you can't buy statues, paintings, or coloring books of Johnny Mueller in malls and department stores in Venezuela. Thank God for that, huh? But I digress, as usual. Now, the thing is, we all know that Chavez died a couple years back, but it's as if he hasn't died at all when you're in Venezuela. What do I mean by that? Well, here's something else you'll never read about in the first world media. And I don't know why, because it's really good copy. I'm sure you never knew that the huge presidential mansion and government residences for the president, and these things are located throughout the country. And believe me, there's a giant presidential palace right in Caracas. Anyway, the sitting president, President Maduro, he does not live in any of the presidential palaces. He lives in an apartment complex because, guess what? When he got elected or took over the dictatorship, whichever way you want to look at it, he did not have the balls or the popular support to kick all the Chavez family hangers-on out of those buildings. So guess who lives in the presidential palaces? Not him or his relatives, but relatives of Hugo who've got the last name Chavez. And if you check out the names of all the diplomatic appointments and cabinet members, they're also family members of, not Maduro, Chavez. Basically, the Chavez family is still in control of the country, and they're all sucking off the government tit as usual. And it's a mighty big tit, because remember, they're the third largest oil producer in the world. But let's get back to that empty Jeep car dealership and that salesman I was talking to about it. He said the Venezuelan branch of his car company had to take a $750 million write-off in the last year just due to the currency problems alone. So all the new car dealerships have turned into basically repair shops. It's the mechanics and the service departments that are keeping the doors open. And as far as parts, well, like I said, they have factories here, but they're only just limping along and sporadically open. They need parts too, so that makes for a booming black market business for truckers who drive to Colombia and buy the parts there in dollars, then take them out of the boxes, take the tags off and rough them up a bit to make them look used, bring them back across the border into Venezuela as used items, and thus pay almost no duty, and then mark them up about 400% and sell them back to the dealerships. And still, because there's such a demand and cars break down all the time, obviously, there's a 6 month or so wait for simple parts. And even so, you'll pay 5 times the price that's on Amazon. So let's take a look at this. This is basically how it works out. Gas is virtually free down here. You pay about 10 cents for a tank full. So in effect, everyone treats it like a waste product, like it's air, meaning there's absolutely no conservation of fuel at all. So, people who've got vehicles sit around in them all day and use the air conditioning. Why? Because it's too damn expensive to air condition your house. And believe me, you do need air conditioning down here. Now, before I go on, I'd like to say that I sound like I have a lisp, I know. But that's just because I'm not at my regular recording facility and I guess I'm stuck. I have to suffer with some Venezuelan equipment this time. So, bear with me. If I sound like I have a lisp, well, it's just temporary and not intentional. So let me get back to the point with my artificial lisp. Okay, where was I? Oh yeah, about that constant need for air conditioning. Since so many of the major cities are on or at sea level and we're close to the equator, so you're looking at 90 degree temperatures every day, at least. Now, you do see air conditioning units in windows all over the place here, but almost no one uses them because electricity is way too expensive for the average citizen, even though it's only 3 to 5 cents per kilowatt hour. About a half to a third as much as it is up in the States, and about half to a third as much as it is in the neighboring countries of Colombia and Brazil. But you see, the thing is, they have such a terrible infrastructure that there are power outages every day. In fact, since I've been here now, there have been 3 of them. And I was told that about a month ago, 70% of the entire country went dead for about 16 hours. So how could that happen to a country that's the third largest producer of oil in the world? Easy. They don't spend any money on infrastructure, so they don't build any power plants. Instead, they just trade oil to adjacent countries in exchange for electricity. Now, they could build power plants that run on oil, but those are not the best choices. They really can't be scaled up to huge operations like power plants that run on natural gas, coal, thermal, or hydropower, which they have plenty of but don't care to invest in. So Venezuela ends up buying about half of its power from Colombia, believe it or not. Anyway, it's a complicated situation, and even at 3 to 5 cents a kilowatt hour, the average home or office with an air conditioner would use at minimum 500 kilowatt hours a month. I mean, go ahead and check your own bill out and you'll see what I mean. Which would result in a bill of about $20 to $25 a month for the average Venezuelan family that used air conditioning, which is about half the salary of your average worker. So you can see Venezuelans prefer to sweat and eat rather than stay cool and starve. But let me get back to that little tour I took up the mountainside on one of those big ski lifts. Now, I mentioned before that nothing is really dependable or works correctly in Venezuela, so why would I risk taking a 15 or 20 minute ride up the side of a mountain on that thing? Well, because the lift was made in Switzerland, and the Venezuelans have a long-term maintenance contract with the Swiss, making that very cool tram ride the exception to the rule. And I tell you, if you're ever down here, which you probably will never be, and I don't really recommend it, but if you are, you have to take that ride. So why am I mentioning this? It's because it relates to the fact that most city-dwelling Venezuelans have become petty crooks and small-time con artists. They have to be, due to the corrupt socialist system they live under. It's the only way city folks, anyway, can survive. Like I said earlier, even four family members making minimum wage could only just about pay for a decent apartment, with not a cent or a bolivar left over, so how do they eat and survive? Well, they've found 1,001 ways to weasel money and work the system, as usual, when living under that kind of chaos. For example, when my nice air-conditioned bus that was running all the time stopped in the parking lot of this famous mountain tram called a teleférico down here. By the way, every skylift is called a teleférico. Anyway, when the nice cool bus pulled into the parking lot, a lady in the bus, who was a registered tour operator, announced to all 25 or 30 passengers, none of whom were Venezuelans, by the way, nearly all Brazilians and Colombians, she announced that the teleférico, the lift, was $5, and that she'll collect it in dollars or bolivars at the rate of 40 bolivars per dollar, which was a lot better than the bank rate, but still only about half of the street rate. Now, officially, it's illegal to buy anything in Venezuela with dollars. You have to go to the bank and change the money first. So here you have a government-registered tour company and tour operator with the tags and uniforms and all, taking dollars and giving you half of the black market rate. Okay, so everyone gave her $5, since all the people on the bus were foreigners and didn't have bolivars. So she jumped off the bus and ran over to the ticket counter about a block away, came back and handed us all our tickets. Now, since I've been around and have been to Venezuela before, I knew they were always trying to gouge you. So I jumped off the bus and ran up to the ticket counter. I was the only one who did that. And I asked the lady at the counter how much for a ticket. And she said, 100 bolivars. So any way you look at it, that's $2 or less, right? So, in effect, our tour guide and bus driver proceeded to rip us all off for at least $3 apiece. Plus, it was a double whammy because she gave us half the street rate in bolivars. Oops, I see I'm getting towards the end of the show now, so I'll have to continue with that next time. Believe me, it's worth listening to. But before we end, I'd like to remind you that you can still sign up for my Latin American seminar Off the Tourist Trail in July. Just go to www.expatwisdom.com and click on the Latin seminar link at the top of the page.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.